Welcome to episode 22 of the Fredcast for June the 30th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to another episode of the Fredcast. This is our special pre-Tour de France 2006 edition. Tonight, I'm going to be bringing you lots of news about the Tour de France, and as a matter of fact, it's not exactly the news that I had planned when I started planning this podcast a day or so ago. In addition, I'll tell you about who won the Tour of Switzerland, whether or not Tyler Hamilton's going to be allowed to keep his Olympic gold medal. I've also got news on product recalls from Specialized, Shimano, and much, much more news. Later, a little bit of information about the vacation that I just had because so many of you have been asking about it. Our new Bents on the Fredcast segment of the show, and a couple of features, upcoming rides, shout-outs, questions, and comments. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Well, hello, fellow Freds. Welcome back to the Fredcast. It's great to be back with you. I had a really good vacation, but I'm ready to get going, especially with the cycling news, and hang on to your hats, because this one is going to get just a little bit strange. Now, a couple of days ago, I started planning out the podcast because I promised all of you that I'd be bringing you another Fredcast before the Tour de France began, and it looks like I'm going to get this one in just under the wire. But one of the reasons why it took me a little bit of extra time to get ready for this version of the Fredcast is something that you may have read about in the news today, or certainly if you happen to go to the Fredcast website. I'm going to read to you verbatim from what I wrote this morning on the Fredcast because it really is almost unbelievable. Today on the front page of the website, I wrote, "The cycling world was stunned this morning when it was learned that pre-race favorites Jan Ulrich and Ivan Basso will not be allowed to race in the 2006 Tour de France." Now, before I go on, let's remember, today, as I'm recording this podcast, it's Friday, June the 30th. This year's Tour de France begins on Saturday, July the 1st, and this all came down this morning. Let me go on. The T-Mobile and CSC riders have now been implicated as having been involved in the Operación Puerto doping scandal, about which I've talked on the show for the past several weeks. Now, you may recall, if you've been listening to the last several shows, that there is a huge scandal going on in Spain, and it was circling around what was formerly called the Liberty Seguros team, what's now called the Astana Worth team. And you'll recall that the team manager, Manolo Saiz, as well as a couple of doctors, were suspended and implicated in what now appears to have been a very, very wide-ranging doping scandal in the world of cycling. Now, Ulrich, along with teammate Oscar Sevilla and team manager Rudy Pevenage, were suspended by the T-Mobile team earlier today, while Ivan Basso was banned from this year's tour by the organizers of the race. Now, according to cyclingnews.com, the Spanish radio station Cadena SAR has released a list of 58 professional cyclist implicated in Operación Puerto. The list includes people who have already been implicated in other doping scandals, such as Roberto Harris and this one really gets me, Tyler Hamilton, as well as a large number of riders from Astana Worth, as well as Ulrich, Basso, and others. This is a huge development and will certainly throw the entire peloton into confusion. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit later about what I think this does for the chances of the rest of the riders in the tour. But originally, I had planned that tonight's podcast was going to be mainly about who the leaders were going to be, who the possible winners were going to be. And if you think about it, before this morning, most people were saying that it could be Jan Ulrich, Ivan Basso, or several others. Now, the two main contenders for the yellow jersey by the time it gets to the Champs-Élysées at the end of the month are now gone, and this has really opened the race up to a lot of possibilities. Now, before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about what the teams are saying in their news releases on their websites about today's suspensions and the departures of these very, very key riders from the Tour de France. So I've put some links into the show notes to give you a couple of pages on the web that you can go to read exactly what it is that the teams are saying about these suspensions. But for instance, going to the T-Mobile website explains why it is that Ulrich, Sevilla, and Pevenage were suspended from the team. Now, the point of the press release from T-Mobile isn't that they necessarily believe that Jan Ulrich was doping. There's been no proof of that. Right now, all there is an indication that Ulrich and others had a connection to the doctors and the clinic that were involved in this doping scandal in Spain. Now, why is that important? I mean, you know, at least here in the United States, somebody is innocent until proven guilty. So why is it that the team has kicked Ulrich off the squad, at least for the tour, and said that he can't race in it? Because nobody's proven him guilty. There are just some allegations out there that he had a connection. Well, the reason is that because when all of these allegations first popped up, T-Mobile, in an effort to make sure that they had a clean team, asked their cyclist to sign statements saying that they had absolutely no connection to any of the goings-on in Spain. Now that they've been implicated, and now that evidence has come out that they actually did have a connection, according to Christian Frommert, the director of sports communication for T-Mobile International, quote, "Our stance was always unequivocal. If we are presented with evidence which leads us to doubt the credibility of one or other of the riders, then we act upon it immediately. That is the case now." So in other words, these guys actually signed written statements saying that they had nothing to do with it. Now evidence has come out, which seems, at least to T-Mobile, to be fairly convincing that they did have something to do with it. Whether or not they were actually doping or not is irrelevant. The fact is that they signed these statements saying that they didn't have a connection. Now it's obvious that they did, not that they were necessarily doping. And as a result, in order to keep their team clean and in order to defend what's left of the integrity of professional cycling, T-Mobile made the decision that Jan was not going to be participating in this year's tour. Now, the situation at Team CSC is very, very similar. If you go to their website, and again, the link's in the show notes, their statement is very, very clear. I'll read it to you verbatim. They said, quote, "We have made this decision in accordance with the team's ethics, the same ethics which apply to all the Pro Tour teams. If a rider is under suspicion or investigation, it does not make any sense for him to do a race. Our decision is made out of respect for the team, for the sport, and in this case, also for the Tour de France itself. It upsets me a great deal that we will not be seeing Yvonne in this year's tour, but I am left with no other choice, and the focus now should be on doing a great race with the remaining eight riders on our team." And that announcement came from Bjarne Riis, who's the director sportif of Team CSC. He went on to say, "Of course, we want to make it very clear that we have not been presented with any evidence whatsoever of Yvonne being involved in doping. This is also what Yvonne has told us, but we will follow the case closely and await further information. We have also chosen to send Yvonne home in order for him to concentrate on his defense to the allegations he might be facing as a result of the Spanish investigation. In our opinion, this is not consistent with trying to win the Tour de France." So these teams seem to be very, very consistent. If you're under investigation, if you're under suspicion, we are not going to allow you to participate in the Tour de France. Okay, so what about Astana Wirth, the former Liberty Seguros team, the one which is really at the nexus of this entire scandal? What about their team? Are they going to be participating? Well, earlier in the week, it sure looked like they were going to be participating. You see, because they took their case to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, and they decided that Astana Wirth would be allowed to race in the event, despite the fact that the organizers of the Tour de France didn't want them to race. But then this list comes out, the one that I mentioned earlier of 58 riders comes out, and it turns out that five of its riders were implicated in the Operación Puerto scandal. Now, I want you to understand that the key rider that we've been talking about a lot as a potential leader in the Tour de France, Alexander Vinokourov, was not implicated at all in this scandal. But the problem is that when you have this many riders being implicated, and when there's a minimum number of racers that you've got to have in the race, you simply have to pull the entire team out. And that's exactly what the Astana Wirth team did. They pulled out the entire team. You know, it's one of those cases where a few bad apples spoil the whole bunch. Well, in this case, five of its riders spoiled the entire team's chances of actually participating in the Tour de France. And as a result of their pulling out, instead of 21 teams being in this year's Tour, there's only going to be 20 teams in this year's Tour. Now, there was an official statement put out by Active Bay, which is the team's management company, confirming the news, and they said, quote, "In view of the content of the dossier sent to Spanish authorities, Active Bay has decided, in accordance with the ethical code signed between the UCI Pro Tours teams, to withdraw from the Tour de France those riders that appear in the above-mentioned dossier. This decision is adopted without prejudice of the respect to the right to the presumption of innocence of these riders, and of that Active Bay will exercise the actions for the defense of its rights and those of its workers. This measure does not concern the team's riders of the Tour de France that are not included in the dossier, specifically Alexander Vinokourov, Andrei Kazechkin, Carlos Barreto, and Luis Leon Sanchez. Nevertheless, the withdrawal of the riders that appear in the above-mentioned dossier implies that the Tour de France team will not have the minimum number of riders demanded by the UCI rules, which means the team will not be able to take the start tomorrow morning in the Tour de France." So this, fellow Freds, is a huge scandal. Now, there was a scandal back in 1998 that had to do with the Festina team. It looks like this scandal, talking about 58 professional riders, this scandal is going to eclipse the one from the 90s, and it is going to be broad and all-encompassing, and it's going to take weeks, months, maybe even years for this entire thing to shake out. But meanwhile, the Tour de France starts in just a couple of hours. What's going to happen in this year's Tour? Well, first of all, this afternoon, the organizers of the Tour de France posted a new rider list, a new start list for all of the riders who are going to be participating in the Tour de France. And I've put a link in the show notes to the website where you can go and you can see what has happened. And actually, if you go to the Velo News website, they've got a really interesting list because there, they're showing the entire original list of riders and they've put lines through those riders who are not going to be participating. And it really, really is sad. So bottom line is, who are the big contenders now? Which riders have the best chance of replacing guys like Armstrong, Ulrich, and Basso in leading this year's Tour de France? Well, my original list and the one that I was planning on talking to you about tonight before all of this came down this morning, at the top of my original list were Basso and Ulrich. Now, you remember that Basso won the Giro d'Italia, and Ulrich, which you don't know because I haven't reported yet on it here on the Fredcast, but the bottom line is that Ulrich won the Tour of Switzerland, and it was really looking like both of these riders were peaking just in advance of the Tour de France, and they both seemed to have a really, really good chance, and it looked like it was going to be a duel, a total shootout until the final stages leading up to the Champs-Élysées, but it doesn't matter anymore. Those guys aren't in it anymore. Well, with those riders gone, I definitely have some additional people that were on my original list who I felt really had a good chance of being contenders, and certainly at the top of the list, guys like Floyd Landis. Floyd has had a really, really good year this year in racing. And I guess my only concern with Floyd is, did he peak early in the season? Does he still have the legs? Does he still have the lungs to win the Tour de France? Also on my list, Levi Leipheimer, also having an amazing year this year and really has a definite chance. Another guy who's always sort of been a bridesmaid and never had a chance to be a bride, a guy who was a good water bottle carrier and a good supporter of Lance Armstrong, George Hincapie. George, all of a sudden to me, moves into the spot where he has a definite chance of being a contender in this year's Tour. Who else is on my list? Dave Zabriskie. I guess I have a couple of concerns about Dave because Dave seems to have this this reputation and this habit of sort of blowing up in the middle of a race. And so we'll see whether or not Dave can actually take it all the way through this year's Tour and be a contender. So there's a possibility there. I'd say he's sort of an outside shot. A couple of other guys, Alejandro Valverde is a possibility. Sal Vadelli is a possibility. Cadel Evans is a name that I've heard people talking about. And of course, Iban Mayo. So there's a lot of other riders out there, but the bottom line is it's nowhere near like the last few years where there was always one guy that we were looking at or a couple of guys that we were looking at, or even the way we thought it was going to be yesterday when it really looked like Basso and Ulrich were going to be the two guys fighting it out. It's now an open field, and I think it's going to make for an extremely exciting Tour de France. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the first few days, whether one rider is more dominant over the other, whether one team is more dominant over the other, because really the Tour de France is more about a team than it is about an individual. As much as we heard about Lance Armstrong over the last 7 years, it was Lance Armstrong being a member of a very, very cohesive and powerful team of very diverse riders that allowed him to be on the podium wearing that final yellow jersey at the end of the Tour de France. So we'll see which teams are the strongest, which rider is the strongest. It's going to be, in my opinion, a much, much more interesting Tour de France than we may have originally thought. Now, as if all of that doping news wasn't enough, and if Team CSC didn't have enough problems with its race leader out of the race before the race even begins, turns out Team CSC has another doping scandal on its hands. This one I looked at from cyclingnews.com, and apparently the French newspaper L'Equipe is publishing more doping allegations concerning CSC in today's edition. They say that a plastic bag filled with syringes was found by a cleaning person at a Parisian underground parking lot on the eve of the Paris-Roubaix race on April the 8th. There is about 100 syringes that are currently being analyzed by a judicial expert lab called ToxLab, but the needles are reported to have been meticulously cleaned before being discharged. So CSC so far has denied any association with this scandal, but you know, the last thing anybody in cycling needs is another doping scandal on its hands. And before I move on with any of this, I just have to give you my opinion. And it's a pretty strong one, and I'm pretty sure the rest of you are going to agree, but the bottom line is I am sick and tired of all of these doping allegations in the world of cycling. In the world of sport, period, look at all of the scandals and all of the discussion that has gone on as far as professional baseball in the United States is concerned, and so many other sports, whether they're Olympic sports or whether they're professional sports, I am sick and tired of all of this. Athleticism is about talent. It's about innate ability. It's about training. And if you want to be an athlete and you want to compete, you either have it or you don't. And trying to get it out of chemicals, trying to get it out of a syringe is not the way to do it. It is only a sure way to alienate the fans, to taint the sport. And at least as a father, in my opinion, it is a really great way to teach the wrong message to kids. And I'm sick and tired of it. And personally, I hope every single rider, every single team director, every single doctor that had something to do with this scandal that has messed up this year's Tour de France, I hope every one of them that it turns out to be proven guilty is thrown out of the sport of cycling and that they never come back. And that those people who do come back are clean and are good sports, because that's what this is all about. It's about sportsmanship. It's about honesty. And it's time for honesty, sportsmanship, and clean cyclists to come back to the world of cycling, to come back to professional baseball, to come back to sports, because this must stop. Okay. The rant is over. I'll get off my high horse. I'm just really upset about this. It is just way too upsetting for me. All right. So what about the Tour de France? Where are you going to be able to watch it? Where are you going to be able to learn about it? Well, of course, you'll be able to find it here on the Fredcast. I will be back toward my regular schedule next week, where I'll be recording Monday night. You'll be able to hear it on Tuesday, and I'll give you a full update on what's happened at the Tour de France up until then. But of course, on a daily basis, where can you get your Tour de France fix? Because as much as I'd love to give you a daily update, it is just not possible for me. My life is way too busy. First of all, in the United States, OLN. I've put a link in the show notes to their tour schedule. So click on there and you'll be able to download their tour schedule. And you know that they're going to be giving you live wall-to-wall race coverage every single morning. So get up early, especially if you're on the West Coast, or maybe you're even all the way out in Hawaii. If you want to watch that, you're going to have to get up early in order to watch it. And you may end up going in late to work, as I do during the tour, but that's where you'll be able to find it. Now, of course, if you are at work and you don't have a TV, you don't have satellite, or you don't have cable, go to cycling.tv. You'll be able to watch it there. So two great places where you'll be able to see it. And of course, there's all sorts of places on the internet where you'll be able to get news. But please come back to the Fredcast, where I'll be able to give you the news as well as analysis of the race. All right, enough Tour de France. Let's do very, very quickly. Let me just tell you something I've already told you before. Where we left off on the Fredcast the last time I did a show before I went away on my vacation, we were talking about the Tour of Switzerland. And at the Tour of Switzerland, it was won by, as I told you a few minutes ago, Jan Ulrich. And second place went to Koldo Gil from Spain and the Sonier Duval team. Third to Jörg Jaksi from the Wirth team of Germany. And it was a great race for Jan. He really, really did very well. And listen, I'm the first to admit it. I was the one who was coming out, and I was telling you that I felt that perhaps Jan didn't have the legs anymore. Perhaps Jan had taken too much time off in the off season, and his training really, really wasn't right. It looks to me like his training was spot on. The man was obviously doing something that Lance has done over the last several years, which is to just attack one race, just focus on one race, and that was the Tour de France. But he went out, he won the Tour of Switzerland to prove that he had the legs, that his training had paid off, and it looked to me like he was peaking. And unfortunately, even though he was able to win the Tour of Switzerland, he's going to be watching the Tour de France the same way you and I are, and that's from the couch, and that's really, really too bad. Okay, stand by. Only one more scandal-related story, and then we can get on to better news, and I can stop being sort of your angry commentator for the night. This one has to do with Tyler Hamilton. And Tyler Hamilton, as you'll recall, as I talked about a few minutes ago, he has been suspended from cycling for 2 years as a result of having been tested positive for blood doping. And he appealed, and that conviction is sticking. Well, as a result of that, you also may recall that Tyler won the gold medal in the Olympic time trial in the 2004 Olympics in Athens. And even though he tested positive and was banned from cycling, he was allowed to keep his Olympic gold medal because his second sample was destroyed when it was mistakenly frozen. Well, even though he was allowed to keep the gold medal, Russia appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. And they did that because the second place finisher, the silver medalist in the 2004 Olympic time trial, was Russian Vyacheslav Ekimov. And so they were trying to make sure that Eki was able to get the gold medal and that Tyler was stripped of his medal. Nevertheless, the Court of Arbitration for Sport decided that they would allow Tyler to keep his gold medal because of the fact of the second sample having been destroyed. They said, quote, "Tyler Hamilton can retain the gold medal he won at the time trial event in Athens, and the ranking of this race is definitely confirmed." So Tyler keeps the gold medal, but as a result, it also sounds like he's been implicated in this Operacion Puerto scandal, so we'll see what happens there. But nevertheless, it will always go down in the record books as Tyler Hamilton winning the gold medal and Vyacheslav Ekimov winning the silver medal at the Athens Olympic Games. Okay, getting away from racing and scandals for a little bit, I've got some news for you about a recall from Shimano. Shimano issued a recall for some front-wheel quick-release skewers for bicycles supplied after November 1st, 2005. And I've put a link in the show notes to the actual page on the Shimano website. But here what we're talking about is some quick-release skewers for Shimano 105, Altegra, Dura-Ace, XT, and XTR. And if you go to the Shimano website, it's going to give you the exact model numbers that you need to be worried about. But specifically, Shimano says that the problem here is that in certain cases, it's possible that after the quick release is locked into position, the skewer could fail or break spontaneously. And of course, as they say, if this happens during cycling, the cyclist may lose control of the bicycle, which could then lead to serious injuries. So definitely go to the Shimano website and check it out. They've got a little flowchart there for you on how to identify whether or not your quick release skewer is included here. And if it is, you need to talk to your bike shop. First of all, you need to stop riding that bike immediately. Take your bike to the bike shop and have them take a look at it, or call Shimano at 1-800-353-4719. That number again is 1-800-353-4719. And they say that if you discover that your bike has the affected quick release skewer, or even if you're uncertain whether or not the hub on your bike contains the affected quick release, you should, and they put this in bold red letters, and I agree with them, stop riding the bicycle immediately. Take it to a local bike shop for verification. Contact Shimano. So take a look at that one. It's potentially serious. If you think that your bike could be affected, please get it checked out. It's something that you do not want to fool with. All right. I have another recall for you, and this one is from Specialized Bicycles. And here they're recalling bicycles due to a potential fall hazard. Specifically, they're talking about bikes. There's about 2,700 of them with the SW carbon stem with a magnesium faceplate. The problem here is that the bicycle stem has a magnesium faceplate that holds the handlebar in place, and the faceplates could crack along the handlebar, allowing it to break off the bike, posing once again a serious fall hazard. Specialized has received 5 reports of the magnesium faceplate exhibiting cracks, but no injuries have been reported. Now, their description is as follows. The SW carbon stem with magnesium faceplate is black with the words S-Works and magnesium faceplate printed on it. The stems were included as original equipment on the following 2006 models. S-Works Tarmac, Tarmac Pro, S-Works Roubaix, Roubaix Pro, Allais Pro, and S-Works Transition. It was also sold as an aftermarket item under the name S-Works Advanced Composite Mag Road Stem. If you have a bike that was a 2006 model, one of the models that I mentioned, and it's equipped with one of these stems, immediately stop riding the bike. Don't use it. Take it to your authorized Specialized retailer for a free replacement faceplate. And if you have questions, call Specialized at area code 877-808-8154. The number again, 877-808-8154. I've put a link in the show notes to both of these recall notices. They are both potentially serious. Please check them out. If you have one of these affected products, please stop using it. We don't want any of you to get injured. Okay, and here's a great new law that almost makes me want to move from California to Oklahoma. Oklahoma Governor Brad Henry signed a new law in May, which amends the state's vehicle code, telling automobile drivers that they have to give bicycles, quote, due care when passing, and it defines a safe passing clearance as not less than 3 feet. Now, I love this. How many times have you been out riding when the car next to you gets so close, you feel like you're going to get the paint color on your shorts? I mean, it happened to me the other night. I was riding on what it was essentially a residential street. There were cars parked on the right-hand side, and so I was staying to the left of those cars that were parked and trying to maintain a safe distance from their doors in case somebody should decide to open up their door. And sure enough, a car passes me, goes right in front of me, no turn signal, and decides to turn into the driveway, and I literally had less than a second to stop. Otherwise, I was going to die. I mean, it's just, they just get that close. So I love the fact that here in Oklahoma, they're saying that you've got to stay 3 feet away from a cyclist. Now, they also are imposing new fines and applicable penalties for anybody who gets injured by a car, anybody who gets killed by a car. Now, the fines aren't really big, but the point of the matter is this 3-foot zone of safety. And I don't know whether or not this means that state troopers and local sheriffs and local police departments are going to ticket drivers who get within this 3-foot zone, but I sure hope so. And I really hope that this becomes a national trend, because I hear from a lot of you who have run-ins with motorists, as I do almost every day when I go out for a ride. Let's face it, cycling is safe, but with these drivers out there literally blind to the fact that we're out there, and not realizing how close their mirrors get to us sometimes, it really would be great if this buffer zone was something that we saw from coast to coast or even all over the world in other countries, other places where people are listening to the Fredcast. So hopefully let's all watch and see what happens in Oklahoma. If you live in Oklahoma and you have any information about whether or not the police are actually going to be giving tickets for somebody getting within this 3-foot zone, please let me know. I would love to let other people on the Fredcast know, because there are a lot of cycling advocacy groups that listen to the Fredcast and a lot of people who take a lot of these issues very seriously. And I'd love to see this become a national or even an international trend. Okay, and finally tonight, you may recall a few weeks ago I told you about the new partnership between Nike and Apple for what they're calling their Nike Plus iPod product. And this is the one where you would put a special chip into your special Nike shoe, and you would have a special receiver attached to your iPod. And then if you were running, you'd be able to get distance and speed and other fitness information fed to you through your headphones and also on the display of your iPod, much like on a cycle computer. And we talked about the fact that you would be able to sync this information with your iTunes software, the free Apple iTunes software, but that the capabilities were not yet in the released version of iTunes. Well, I'm happy to say that this week, Apple did release the latest version of iTunes, 6.0.5. And I put a link in the show notes so that if you are a multi-sport athlete and you're a runner and this is something you're interested in, you can download it. The other thing that was added this week to iTunes is the Nike Sport Music section of iTunes. And I've put a link into the show notes for that area of iTunes. And if this link is different than other links that I've put in the show notes before, because instead of this one opening up in your web browser, this one will actually open up inside iTunes. So you've got to have iTunes equipped on your computer, whether Windows or Mac. Click on that link and it should open up in iTunes. And what you're going to find there are special Nike workouts for running, as well as various playlists of music that they're recommending for various distances of running or various workouts of running. So it's a really, really cool idea. So why am I talking about it on the Fredcast? This is a running thing. And I think I've told you before, running to me, you know, from my playing football in high school, my coaches used to punish us with running. So the last thing I want to do is go run, because I consider it a punishment. So why am I talking about it here on the Fredcast, which is a cycling podcast? Well, it's simple, because I firmly believe that the fact that Nike has this in its running shoes, I believe that there's a good possibility that they may be working on something for their cycling shoes as well, something that we may see in the future. So if you're a runner, great thing for you now. And if my prediction comes true, there is a very good possibility that you may have the option of using this software and using the Nike Tunes on your iPod as you're out there riding your bike. So we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, go ahead and get that new version of iTunes. Just click on the link in the show notes and you'll be taken right there. And considering the bad news that we've had tonight, I'm glad to say that that's it for the news for tonight. Okay, so yes, it is true. I'm back from my vacation. Happy to be home, although I have to say I had a great time on my vacation. I got a lot of email from a lot of you saying, you know, you sort of whetted our appetite when you told us a little bit about where you were going, and would you talk about your vacation on the Fredcast? And while I did zero cycling on my vacation, so many of you sent me these emails that I thought I'd just spend a minute or two telling you a little bit about where I went and what I did, because I guess it's a little bit Freddy what I did. I took my family down to the British Virgin Islands. And if you're not familiar with where that is, go to Florida and turn right. No, it's down in the Caribbean, just to the southeast of Puerto Rico. And from Puerto Rico, you overfly the U.S. Virgin Islands and you fly to an island called Tortola, which is pretty much the main island of the British Virgin Islands. And the Tortola is within sight of St. John and St. Thomas, which are two of the main islands of the U.S. Virgin Islands. So that should give you a fairly good idea of where it is. Why did we go to the BVI? Well, this is actually not our first trip there. The reason we go down there is, number one, it is absolutely spectacular. It's drop-dead gorgeous there. And if you look at the license plates on the cars, at the top it says British Virgin Islands, and at the bottom it says Nature's Little Secrets. It really is just an amazingly beautiful place to go. Now, what we do when we go there, we don't stay in a hotel. We literally go from the airport to a marina where we pick up what's called a bear boat. Now, if you've never heard of a bear boat, it's essentially, in our case, it's a sailboat. And it is outfitted for sailing. And of course, you know, in the galley, there's pots and pans and plates, and there's linens and sheets and towels and things like that on the boat. But otherwise, it's me and my family and a couple of friends this time, and we go sailing for a week. So we go to the marina, we get on the sailboat, and we literally sail away, and we are island hopping for the next week, going from one island to the next, picking up a mooring or dropping an anchor, staying overnight on the boat, maybe cooking at night on the boat, or going ashore to one of the great restaurants that's there. We had just an amazing, amazing time. We would get up in the morning, have some breakfast, go sailing for maybe an hour or two or three to our next location, drop anchor or pick up a mooring, go snorkeling, go swimming, go ashore and walk on the beach, or maybe have a rum drink or two. It really was just a spectacular vacation. I love it. My kids love it. My wife loves it. We brought some friends with us this time who thought they might get seasick, and they never did. Everybody just had a really, really good time. It was a lot of fun. So I put a couple of links in the show notes to a bareboat sailing company that we use that we think is fantastic. They're called The Moorings. They do an amazing job. We've used them four times now in different locations around the world, and they just are really, really great. I put a link to the BVI Tourism site so you can learn a little bit more about the British Virgin Islands. And then I also put a link in there to the American Sailing Association, or ASA, where you can go on and learn how to sail, because although I had sailed when I was a Boy Scout and a little bit as a teenager, I wanted to have all of the certifications before I actually went and took my family on one of these vacations where we were literally living on a boat for a week. And so my wife and I took all of the classes necessary in order to get all of the official certifications so that we would be safe when we were out there on the ocean. So it really is a great vacation. It is a relatively inexpensive vacation. Other than the airfare to get where you're going, when you consider what you might pay for a hotel and rental cars and things like that, I find that this is far more cost effective, especially when we bring friends, because we're able to share the costs. So really a great vacation. I had a great time. Obviously, it took me a long time to get caught up on my emails and also on my day job work. So glad to be back. Thank you all for asking me so much about the vacation and wishing me a good time. Had a good time. Glad to be back, and I'm glad to be back with you as we get ready for the Tour de France. Now, before we get on with any of the other features tonight, happy to be bringing you episode 2 of our new feature on the Fredcast. This is the one that we call Bents on the Fredcast, where listener Rick is providing us with some just really amazing information on recumbents and recumbent riding. So take it away, Rick.
Thanks, David. This is Rick. I'm near Galveston, where it's hot and humid, and this is Bents on the Fredcast. Today, we'll look at the various basic designs for recumbents, as well as generalizing about their pros and cons. Remember from last week, we're not trying to start a war with Reggie riders versus recumbent design, because there are no perfect bicycle designs. Everything is a compromise, and the designs are generally intended to favor one or more goals, whether it's speed, comfort, humor, etc. And also remember that in open class racing, recumbents hold all the records. If there's no restrictions on bicycle design, bents win every time. Now, I'll be contrasting popular bent models with traditional road bikes. You won't hear anything about mountain bikes for one good reason. To make it on the trails, you need to have a high and displaceable center of gravity. That is, you need to be able to stand up on the pedals, shift your weight back and forth in order to compensate for the unevenness of the trails. There's not a bent made today that I know of that can do that. A few have been advertised, but my advice is if you're going to be off-road, stick with conventional designed bicycles. I'll close with a website where you can examine all the types I've described. It's a commercial website with which I have no relationship. We'll explore long wheelbase, short wheelbase, compact long wheelbase. These models which come with either overseat or underseat steering. I'll include some and you'll have trouble finding elsewhere, which is relative speed stats based on my own aged experience. Your mileage will vary and will almost certainly be considerably higher in terms of the speeds. The most familiar recumbent design is the long wheelbase, it's abbreviated capital LWB. These bikes are generally long, low, and fast, with 650C or 700C rear tires and 406 or 451 front tires. Because the front seat is located down and in front of the rear wheel, the bikes have to be long. The small front wheel is necessary because the larger wheel would raise the cranks, which are in front of you at a bent, to the point that your view of the road would be impaired and you'd be pedaling uphill all day long. A good example of this type of bike is the Rans V2 or Velocity 2, VAR Velocity Squared. It comes in steel or aluminum frame with a front fairing to cut wind resistance. Its low speed handling is challenging, but its top end is remarkable, especially given its weight, which is over 30 pounds. Long bikes have to be heavy due to all the tubing required to cover that wheelbase, whether they're aluminum, titanium, or steel. My sprint speed on the V2 was 28 miles an hour. That's faster than any other bike I'll mention. My 100-mile cruising average was 15 miles per hour. Not a lot to brag on, but when you compare it with the other stats I'll give, you can translate it to your own averages. Long wheelbase bents are difficult to transport. They feel like they're 7 feet long, and they're very difficult to carry on cars, bus racks, and such, which limits the convenience factor of the long wheelbase. But the long wheelbase design began the current bent era with home belts like the Winnebago. But now short wheelbase designs called high racers are the rage. These take traditional road bike parts, add a full lightweight seat, and rearrange the cranks upward and forward. The laid-back seat, often of carbon fiber or FRP, fiber-reinforced plastic, is located between the wheels, which are spaced just like a Trek or a Cannondale. The example here is a Rans Force 5. It's a much lighter bike, very easy to transport, it's unfared, and although the sprint for me on this bike was reduced to 25 miles an hour, the cruise average rose to 17 miles per hour. It's less aerodynamic, but a lot lighter. These bikes can be in the 20-pound range, which is very light for a bent. And it's still much more aerodynamic than a diamond frame bike, even when you consider getting down on the aero bars in a full tuck position. But it's not a bike for newbies. Getting started and clipped in can represent a challenge, and I'd not recommend it as a first bent choice. In the middle between the short and long wheelbase are the compact long wheelbase, or CLWB bikes. My first bent was a used bike EAT. This dealer's now out of business or manufacturer. It was essentially an aluminum bar with a 16-inch front wheel and a 20-inch rear. It drew a lot of attention and was fun and easy to ride, as long as you don't intend to cruise at more than 10 to 12 miles an hour or sprint to more than 15. It was friendly but heavy and very un-aerodynamic, and they are out of production. There are some other examples of the compact long wheelbase on the website that I'll give you. Some other models are very uncommon in the U.S. but can be seen in Europe, and they're based on the low racer design. These are the sort of short wheelbase bents where you stay clipped in at stops and just put your hand out to steady yourself. The seat is often only a few inches above the street. They can be hard to see in traffic, but they work within the ground effect and wind shadow that pretty much consists of just your shoes to beat any other unfair design on the planet. I'd like to give you a number on that, but I'm still waiting for $3,500 to fall from the sky so that I can get one to test. In short, they are wickedly fast, exotic, imported, and expensive. Like an overpriced sports car, you can pour yourself into these models. And the example I'd like to give, and the one I'm saving up for, is the HP Velotechnics Speed Machine. There's also a Dutch bike called the Serian, that's S-E-R-I-A-N-S-L, which is about the only bent manufactured that's well under 20 pounds. These are made frequently of exotic materials and have a very distinctive look. So if you go searching on the web, you won't see these at the website I'm going to give you. You'll have to look up recumbent low racers. The website of the week is hostelshop.com. That's hostelshoppe.com. They carry most of the bent models except for the low racers. They carry specific accessories and offer a free web and snail mail catalog. You'll be able to see representatives of these here. Please let me know what else you'd like to hear by emailing bentsonthefredcast@mail.com. And I'd like to also encourage you not to write for the sake of my ego, but I'm trying to consider whether to improve the podcasting setup here. So if you're happy with the cast and unhappy with the audio, just let me know. In the meantime, lie back and win.
Thanks again, Rick, for yet another educational episode of Bents on the Fredcast. You know, I know nothing about recumbents. And I'm learning a lot from these segments that Rick has been providing to us. And I've gotten a lot of great listener feedback from everybody who has said that they also are learning a lot about recumbents and that they're gaining just a little bit more respect for recumbent riders that they see out there on centuries and half centuries and things like that. So be sure that you let Rick know what you like, what you don't like about the segments. Hopefully you like more than you don't. And let me know as well, because it is, once again, it's an educational process for me. And if there's something that you'd like to hear about recumbents, please let me know. And whether it's about recumbents or anything else, go ahead and send me an email, send me a voice message, and let me know what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. Okay, well, we've done a lot of talking on the Fredcast about the Garmin products, specifically the Garmin Forerunner and the Garmin Edge products, and the Edge is really nice because it's specifically made for cycling. And I got an email from listener Webb from Alabama who wanted to bring to our attention something that he saw in a magazine, something that he thought that those of us who have the Garmin Edge might find interesting. It is a product called Turbo Cell Charge, and this is yet another one of those products where if you're out there in the wilds and your cell phone starts to die and you don't have a car to plug into or you don't have a wall to plug into, you can use a battery to charge your cell phone. And what Webb noticed about this product was the fact that the tip that's used to charge the Motorola Razr phone is the exact same tip that would be used for charging a Garmin Edge. And so he recommended that this might be a great product for Fredcast listeners. And I put a link in the show notes to it. It looks like something that's really, really great because it's portable, it's small, and it uses a AA battery, something that is going to be really, really easy to find no matter where you are. So go ahead and check that out. It's at turbocellcharge.com, and there is a link in the show notes. Now, got another email from listener Gil from Charlotte, North Carolina, and Gil had some really great questions about frame materials and doing a comparison on the show of what frame materials did for the ride of a particular bicycle. And I mentioned the fact that I felt that I think a lot of my experiences that I've had with different frame materials, be they steel or aluminum or titanium or carbon, a lot of my feelings are very subjective. So that, for instance, I have a lot of friends who just live and die by titanium frames. That's all that they would ever ride. But I have to tell you, the titanium frames that I've ridden, whether they're road bikes or mountain bikes, I haven't really liked. The ride just didn't feel good to me. And I really prefer an aluminum frame, or what I really prefer is a carbon fiber frame, and that's what I'm riding right now on my Colnago. So I had a couple of thoughts about this, and I'd like your help. First of all, I'd love to hear from you, the Fredcast listener, about what frame materials you like, but not just what frame materials you like, but why. What is it about carbon? What is it about titanium? Or whatever your frame is made out of, what is it about the ride characteristics, about the ride quality that you like? Now, I'd like to get this two ways, and one of them is preferred. Number one, you can always send an email, and that's thefredcast@gmail.com. But what I'd really like is an audio comment. Maybe sit down in front of your computer and record a couple seconds, a couple minutes of what it is that you like. Try to be as concise as possible, because I really would like to play these audio comments on the show, and if they get real long, I'm not going to be able to play too many of them. And if you don't have the ability to sit down in front of your computer and record, which these days is pretty simple, but if you can't do it, go ahead and use the voicemail line, the listener hotline, at 206-203-FRED, and give a call. Let me know what it is about your frame's material that you really like, or what it is that you don't like, because I want to see if we can come up with some sort of a consensus so that we can tell our fellow Fredcast listeners who might be out there, you know, searching for a new bike, what it is that we like about the frame materials on our bike. And of course, I'll include some comments when we get there about what it is that I like about carbon fiber. Now, I was thinking that once we do this, once we get sort of the subjective comments of the Fredcast listeners, I'll go out and I'll look for frame builders and bike shops and people who can, who are experts, who can tell us exactly why it is that they use the materials that they use or why they recommend the materials that they use. And this might be something that might be really, really helpful for you when you go out to buy your next bike. So please, if you can, send me audio comments. That's definitely preferred. Of course, I'll accept your emails, but do try to send me the audio comments. That would be very, very much appreciated. Next up, I want to tell you about a program that, and again, I got to thank you listeners out there. You listeners rock. You send me some great suggestions and some great products to take a look at. This one came from listener Todd from Georgia, and he told me about a free download for Palm OS handhelds. Now, unfortunately, this doesn't work for you Windows Mobile or mobile PC people, but this works for anybody who's got a Palm Pilot or anything running the Palm operating system. And this is something that you're going to want to jump on the internet and get right away. I put a link in the show notes. And this is a freeware program that allows you to track the Tour de France on your Palm Pilot. And as soon as I found out about it, I downloaded it. And here it is on my Palm. I've got a Garmin IQ 3600, which is the Garmin Palm Pilot with the built-in GPS, of course, because I'm a Fred and I'm a geek when it comes to GPS. And this program is called Le Tour 2006. So when I tap on it, the first thing that comes up on my screen is a full-color map of the tour and its various stages. And so I've got a map of France, and I can see exactly sort of an overview of where all of the stages of the Tour de France are going to go. And then if I tap on the riders button, it shows me every single team, including their team jersey and the roster. And what's interesting is, for instance, if I scroll over to the team CSC, there's a rider missing here. Because, of course, Ivan Basso isn't on here anymore. So this is up to date as of today. I go over to the T-Mobile team. There's two riders missing because, remember, we talked about that two T-Mobile riders were kicked off. And if I scroll through here, there's no Astana Wirth. So very, very cool that you can see the team jersey, and then you can also see all of the riders that are riding. Now, the thing that's in here is a complete listing of every single stage of the tour. So, for instance, I've just tapped, and I've gone to stage 15, which is taking place on July the 18th, and it shows me right here that it's 187 kilometers, and that it goes from Gap to L'Alpe d'Huez. And it shows me exactly at which kilometer they're going to be able to be hitting a climb, how high that climb is, and what the category of the climb is. And in addition, it shows me graphically a complete elevation profile of that stage. So this is really a really great program, and it's something that I'm going to be referring to every single day of this year's tour. I put a link in the show notes. I definitely recommend that you go there, and if you've got a Palm Pilot and you can do 320 by 320 color graphics or 160 by 160 color graphics, that you're definitely going to want to download this. So it is free. It's not going to cost you anything. It comes from a company called Deep Web Intersolutions, and according to listener Todd, this is a Dutch company, and that they also do a very similar program for Formula One racing. So thanks to Todd for telling us all about it, and I hope that you all download it and that it is something that you find useful for reference during this year's Tour de France. Okay, and as I do every week, I tell you about various rides that are coming up and events, and again, because I've been away, I haven't had a whole lot of time to research a lot of rides that are coming up, but I'm going to tell you about one that I just heard about that sounds like a lot of fun. I wish I was in Indianapolis for this one. This is a ride called the Indianapolis Zoo Wild Ride, and it's taking place September 9th, 2006, and it's the second annual ride. They did it last year. They had over 1,000 riders from an 8-state area, and this year they're expecting to nearly double their attendance. You can choose from a 15-mile ride, a 40-mile ride, a 62-mile metric century, or a 100-mile full century. All courses are starting and finishing at the Indianapolis Zoo and include a lap around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. How cool is that? You get to ride around the Brickyard. That would be really, really neat. You're going to depart from the zoo between 7 and 9 a.m., and of course, you got to be done with your ride by 5 o'clock. There's going to be rest stops and food and water every 15 to 20 miles, And the registration fees, they have different registration fees here. They have one for $120, which they call you a VIP conservation hero because, of course, all of the funds raised are going to the Indianapolis Zoo. $45 if you just want to ride, and $20 for kids 12 and under. They're going to give you breakfast and lunch, and then there's an optional dinner inside the zoo after the ride with live entertainment and a private dolphin show for an additional fee. Now, every participant gets a free t-shirt and free admission to the zoo, but if you're a VIP conservation hero, you also get complimentary parking, free massages, a special jersey, dinner, and VIP hero recognition. This sounds like a lot of fun. How often do you get to have a ride that starts and ends at the zoo? You get a private dolphin show, you get breakfast, lunch, dinner, and you also get to help out the zoo, and you get to ride around the Brickyard, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So great, great ride. I put a link in the show notes so you can go ahead and sign up for that one. Sounds like a lot of fun. Now, the next one, this one isn't a ride. This one is a benefit, and it's definitely cycling related. And this one is taking place here in Southern California, and it's to benefit the National Multiple Sclerosis Society's Pacific Southwest chapter. Now, for full disclosure, I have a little bit of affiliation with them. I've talked to you about the MS-150 rides before. I'm actually the chairman of the planning committee for the Pacific South Coast chapter's MS-150 Beta Bay bike tour that's coming up in October. And you'll be hearing more about that as it gets closer. So I got to tell you that I definitely have a connection to this one, although I don't make any money. It's just a cause that I care very, very deeply about. So I'm going to tell you about it. They're having what they call a viewing party. And they've been doing this the last couple of years where they pick one stage of the Tour de France. And everybody gets together for a really fun morning of sitting around and watching the tour with fellow cyclists and fellow cycling fans. And, of course, it also benefits a great cause. And this one's taking place July the 15th at the Fox Sports Grill in Irvine. And it's going to be a live viewing of Stage 13. For $30, you get a breakfast buffet, a souvenir t-shirt, and a chance to win great cycling giveaways. And, of course, you get to give a little bit of money to benefit a great cause. I hope that you'll consider doing this. I'm planning on being there, and it would be great to meet some of you if you do end up coming out. And I put a link in the show notes to it, so please click there. And if it's something that you're interested in, of course, I know you can watch this on OLN at home, but what fun is that, sitting around with, you know, all by yourself, where you can be with other cyclists and you can help out a great cause at the same time. So consider joining us for that one. It should be a lot of fun. Okay, just a couple of shout outs for you tonight. The first one goes to Listener Ray. Listener Ray gets huge kudos because if you go to the Fredcast.com website, you're going to find now that on the left-hand side of the page, there is some place where you can vote right there for the Fredcast on Podcast Alley. And I want to thank Listener Ray for putting that together for me. So all you got to do is you go in there, you put your email address in there, and we don't do anything with that. Podcast Alley just uses that for verification to make sure that people aren't cheating when they vote. And then you click the vote button and boom, you voted for the Fredcast. You'll get an email back from Podcast Alley. You click the link in that email and your vote gets registered. So thank you so much, Ray, for doing that for us. Really, really appreciate that. And then secondly, just a shout out and more of a question from Listener Todd. Now, Listener Todd enjoyed my review of the Vedio cycle computer, but he had a question about that. You may recall that I reviewed the Vedio MC 1.0 Plus a couple of weeks ago on the Fredcast. And his question was, because it's a wireless cycle computer, does it have any problems with interference from polar heart rate monitors? Apparently, he's got a cycle computer from another brand, which shall remain nameless, and he's having a huge problem where his polar heart rate monitor and his cycle computer have interference, and therefore he either gets no readings or he gets erroneous readings. And so he wanted to know if any of you out there had ever tried a Vedio cycle computer along with a polar heart rate monitor and whether or not you've ever had any problems with it. So do me a favor, send me an email, thefredcast@gmail.com. Let me know whether or not you've tried this so that we can help out Listener Todd. I would greatly appreciate it. Okay, this has been a long show. I got to get to bed. I got to get up early to watch the prologue in the Tour de France in the morning. So I'm going to close it out here. The month is over, so I appreciate all of you voting on Podcast Alley, but there's a new month. You can vote once again. So please go to the website, use Ray's script, and vote for us on Podcast Alley. We really, really appreciate that, and we appreciate you spreading the word amongst your friends and family and fellow cyclists, letting them know about the Fredcast. Again, the audience is just growing by leaps and bounds, and we really, really appreciate it. Lots of ways that you can contact the Fredcast. Of course, there are the Fredcast forums, and I'm going to be going on there this weekend and responding to all the stuff that's come in since I've been gone. There's a lot of stuff going on there, a lot of great interaction going on among fellow Freds and fellow cyclists. Appreciate that, and I'll get on there this weekend and answer some of your questions. You can always send me an email, and I've mentioned that several times so far tonight. It's thefredcast@gmail.com. Love your text mails as well as your audio comments. You can send us a voicemail on the listener hotline at 206-203-FRED. And whenever you have a chance, visit the website. You never know what's going to pop up, like the news flash that I posted this morning about what was going on in the tour. Appreciate you listening. But before we go, as always, tonight's PodSafe Cycling music comes to us from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's music is called Vegas Hard Rock Shuffle by Charlie Crow, and I've put links in the show notes to his Podshow website where you can learn more about him and hear more of Charlie's music. Thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoy the music. I hope you enjoy the tour, but most of all, enjoy the ride.